station. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When legendary drummer Keith Moon was MIA, who did the Who turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When the great Pele asked for a sub, who did his World Cup team turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now this world-renowned musician slash athlete has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, I mean, could you imagine a twin? Paul Lavoie.
1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
Right on, the weekend is here. Yay! I wouldn't have even thought of playing that song if it wasn't for my guest, Jeannie Kench. How are you,
I'm
Madam
great.
Assessor?
Thank you for having us.
Mojave County Assessor Jeannie Kench is here, and she brought a very knowledgeable person. I wouldn't be surprised if he ran against you, you know? Chief Deputy Assessor Darren Rasmussen, welcome to the show.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I'm impressed with your background, your knowledge of everything that we're talking about. It's like you have almost a mini-me.
It's fantastic.
It is.
It's really, really great. I'm very fortunate to have him, especially coming from the Department of Revenue. And if you know anything about our business, the Department of Revenue is kind of like our bosses. They give us our guidelines, tell us how to do things. And he worked there for many years. So
yeah.
To bring in that historical knowledge is really very good for our county.
Right on. It's Friday, August 21st, 2026. I'm Paul Lavoie. You're listening to Speak Out Broadcasting Live from the Speak Out Kitchen with No Sink on McCulloch Boulevard, Lake Havasu City, right? You
That's
like
right.
that.
I love it.
You got to find a new sponsor.
We can't assess a kitchen for in here.
I was going to say, that's an interesting take right there. That's a hot take if you want to know.
Right.
Does this increase the value if we find a sponsor for the Speak Out Kitchen with No
the
Sink?
Kitchen with, yeah, you'd
that's
have
funny.
To, the sponsor would have to include yeah. you know, the added taxes no. that you'd have to pay for that.
I'll stay out of hot water with Mr. Greeley on that
that's
one.
Right.
I'm just not going to say anything if we do, right?
That's
if
right.
we do improve it. All right. Special ticket giveaway today. This one's last minute. The show is tomorrow night at the Tropicana Pavilion in Laughlin, an evening with Steve Trevino. If you like stand-up comedy, this guy is funny. Go ahead and Google him, and then call in the first break if you want tickets. I'll give you a pair. I'll give you two pair. Hey, man, if you want to take the neighbor kids or the neighbors, I'm not sure if there's an age restriction. You might want to check that out, too. It's Steve Trevino, Trevino, at the Tropicana tomorrow night, 8 p.m. And you can go on us. We'll comp you.
That's
right?
Awesome.
And we're not even comp. That's a different station. All right. Let's see. We have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
and
we
I wanna,
do.
You know, we were saying before the show, I always like to give the bad news first and then the good news. Let's talk about the good news.
Thank you.
Before we get into the I wouldn't
controversial.
Say it's a, I don't think it's a. That's an overused word.
Okay.
I think it's more of a clarification.
Thank you.
That you want to make.
Yes, what I want to do.
As
is
far so. As your short-term rental.
Exactly.
I can't call it a bill, though.
No, it's not.
The bill
it's
was
not.
Shelved.
It's our new policy.
The bill vaporized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every other
short-term
rental.
It never was
rental.
A bill. It never ended up with as one.
I got you.
But I do want to talk about the great stuff that's happening with deed fraud and everybody out there, most people out there understand deed fraud. And
SB 1479.
Yes.
Talk
so,
about it.
So we started quite a few years ago. I know I've been in here and we talked about our app program, which is the assessor's address protection program that we created. That morphed into a bill. And the bill, what was the most important thing for our state when it came to deed fraud? I was part of the committee that met and decided what is the most important things to protect people's property conveyances. Mm-hmm. So we came up with 1479, and the committee included the governor's office, it included real estate departments, it included title companies, it included recorders, it included treasurers, it included assessors, and so we all met about three different times to figure out what was the most important.
How long ago was this written?
This was written about a year ago.
Okay.
SB 1479 has seven different very important safeguards that I think everyone's going to be very happy with. Safeguard number one, when deeds are recorded, an ID must now be presented. It wasn't there before. So if anybody's heard the story about Deb Gottlieb and how she lost her, she's from Phoenix and she lost her dad's house, the only way that they found that person, the perpetrator, was through that ID and through the thumbprint when they got it notarized. And so we were pushing really hard to get a thumbprint law. Me and John Gillette were working hard with the Secretary of State's office to get a thumbprint law. Couldn't get it, but now we've got it in this bill. So let me go forward. Safeguard number one, when deeds are recorded, an ID must be presented. Safeguard number two, all counties must implement the address protection program that we started here in Mojave County. So we were the torchbearer on that one. Mm-hmm. We created the program, and now they all also have to provide the same securities with an app program.
So now safeguard number three has an enforcement measure.
That's right. Fraudsters can now be fined. There wasn't that fine at all. They got away with it and walked away.
You just said, oh, my bad.
My bad.
Uh-huh.
No less than $5,000. So plus attorney's fees and all this, the court fees and everything that goes with getting that property back. So that's really good. Safeguard number four is a person that's named in the fraudulent document. So a lot of times they just use someone's name in order to transfer it, and then they don't want to let it go and release it. Well, they can be fined up to $1,000 or more if they don't fix it within 20 days. Safeguard number five, the deed fraud changes from a class one misdemeanor to a class five felony. You know, I can steal your car, Paul, and it's a felony. But I steal your house and it was a misdemeanor.
What?
Yes, I am not kidding you. So now
that's
it's
a little misappropriated priority.
Right.
There.
Maricopa County Assessor, he's seen this happen in his office quite a few times, and it was very important to him and us, obviously, for the committee to make sure that was part of SB 1479. Number six is notaries must obtain thumbprints for all deed transfer documents. So it is not the law that you have to do a thumbprint for all notaries, but it is the law. You have to do a thumbprint for all deed fraud transfers.
Oh.
And so that is fantastic, because that's how you catch the perpetrators, is with that thumbprint.
Sure.
Because, you know, unfortunately, people can get fake IDs really easy right now. They show these fake IDs to realtors. They show these fake IDs to the title companies. Now, the title companies have started getting smart, and they go through a real ID process to make sure that that ID is legitimate.
I got one once. It said Paulie.
Paulie.
You know, like McLovin.
Paulie.
Yeah.
Like your commercial.
Like McLovin, right?
Yeah, right.
It was
right.
Paulie.
It was Paulie.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So, and then safeguard number seven, all remote notarizations must have a clear ID and must keep the recordings for 7 years. Even in Mojave County, we had issues with remote notarization from Florida, for example. We're looking at this transfer. If it smells fishy, it's fishy. It's for sure, right? And somebody from Golden Valley is contacting a remote notary from Florida to transfer the property to somebody in California. Why? Why would that happen? Why would you go all the way to Florida to get a remote? So we contact these companies, these notaries. There's no phone number. You can't get in touch with them. If you do get in touch with them, they send you the video, and the video, you can't even see the ID. It's like blurry because it's in a Zoom-type video,
sure.
Right? And then they said, oh, we don't keep the recordings. So we now, if you want to do anything in Arizona, you have to keep those recordings for 7 years, and you must have a clear ID in that remote video. So all of this happened thanks to Senator Carroll, Representative Bliss, Don Carroll from the AG's office. He's like on a, you know, we call each other on cell phone constantly,
really?
All the time, because if we have any questions at all, he wants to know about it, and then he checks and helps us. Maricopa County Assessor's Office got it over the line because, you know, it's kind of difficult when you're in Mojave County. So he was able to get the meetings put together and everything there in Maricopa County, which was nice. The recorders, including Lydia Durst, she advocated for this because even some of the recorders are like, ah, that's a little bit too much work. She's like, hey, we got to do something, right? And she's now implementing requiring an ID even before she needs to.
What about city clerks? Would that affect them as well?
I don't see it affecting them.
No?
Unless
okay.
they have to do some sort of
I'm talking about like in Clark County, you would file something with the clerk's office, and then you go to the recorder's office and with different documents.
Yeah, so that would be like more. It wouldn't be. That's not really transfers
okay,
and stuff.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, and then Deb Gottlieb. She's wonderful. She's a victim. She was the one that, you know, I saw her on the Phoenix News, and I immediately called her the next day and said we need to work together, and so she's been really wonderful because she went through the whole process and got her house back. But I'm very proud of this because, you know, we did start the movement of deed fraud in Mojave County.
Has this been implemented in other Arizona counties?
It is now because it's a state bill.
So is it mandated?
Yes.
So all Arizona counties through the assessor's office or the recorder's office
yes.
would have this program.
Yes.
And we were the only ones at one time, right?
We were the first ones.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we created the program. We had to go in front of the Board of Supervisors. They believed it would work. They allowed us to have a small charge of $50 on it. Now, that detail didn't come with the law, meaning they have to create a policy in each county that you can voluntarily sign up and get a phone call if somebody's conveying your property.
Okay.
How they do it, whether they charge for it, whatever the charge, that's all going to be up to each county because it's not in the law. But they do have to provide this program. And then, of course, the other program we have available is Lydia's program or the recorder's program, and that's based on name. Ours is based on parcel. And then there's another program coming out, which is great, through and we're meeting with the real estate commissioner next week. And the other program is from the real estate commissioner, and that is if you sell one of your properties, you can voluntarily sign up to be also notified if there's some sort of transfer with your property.
Okay.
So we're going to let the public know. I'm going to have a flyer go out there, and we're going to mass media it and let them all know that you can contact all three of us, and if you just sign them, sign up for all of them, you're going to be very protected in Mojave County.
Well, that's not the only thing you're going to mass media. We're going to talk about that in the next segment, but I want to spend 5 minutes with Darren, if you don't mind, and tell us about your background and how did you get to be Chief Deputy Assessor for Mojave County?
Sure. Yeah. First off, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Blame
her.
Yeah, right. So, excuse me, I got started in the valuation industry in 1996 and got my certification for fee simple valuation appraisal.
Okay.
And carried that license for about 17, or certification for about 17 years. I got into the ad valorem, or the government side, when the bubble burst, you know, the Great Recession. You know, I kind of got word. Appraisers kind of knew something was coming around 2007, 2008. Lehman Brothers goes out of business, and the bubble bursts.
Too big to fail,
right? And the appraisal, you know, the appraisal industry just—I mean, nobody started selling. It just tanked. So I had an opportunity to go to work for Maricopa County.
Okay.
So I went in to Maricopa County as a commercial appraiser, and that's really where I fell in love with the ad valorem community. Allows me to, you know, do what I love to do. I'm a math nerd. I'm an appraisal nerd. But now I get to service the public. So I spent roughly 8.5 years at Maricopa County, several different titles, appraiser. Then I was litigation consultant. And then I managed a team of 10 appraisers and a couple of admin. 2016, I was approached by the Arizona Department of Revenue and asked to create a position that basically was a county liaison. So we worked together creating that position. I also managed a small team of appraisers, but my primary function was to work with all 15 Arizona counties on complex appraisal problems, property tax issues.
I was going to say, when were you brought in as an appraiser to do that job, say, for ADOR?
2016.
No, but when, what type of situation were you brought in to be to appraise a property?
Well, if I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
Well, what was the practical application of your position? What would you go out and do for ADOR?
I traveled the state to all 15 counties. I taught continuing education. I worked with them on complex appraisal problems, helped interpret legislation, helped interpret, you know, new statute, so on and so forth. So I had a lot of hats that I wore, and depending on the needs of that particular county and what the DOR was trying to communicate, that was me.
Okay,
and
I
that's
see.
When I met him.
Oh,
and that's,
okay.
That's how I how I met Jeannie when she got elected. I made many visits.
I thought there maybe was a fraud case where there was a property and you were brought in. You know, is this really worth what he says it's worth?
No, I didn't. That wasn't my function.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what I think of when I think of appraisals. So.
Yeah, yeah. I taught the people to do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
I was at that point in my career. I was teaching them.
So, what does Jeannie have you doing now? How long have you been with the assessor's office?
So, I've been at Mojave County for just over 2 years now. I actually came in as the chief appraiser. And then my predecessor retired, and so she asked me to be her chief deputy, and here we are today.
Okay.
And I hold a certification. It's assessment administration specialist, and I basically I pretty much run the office of on the day-to-day stuff, but my specialty, again, is statutory analyzation, primarily writing legislation, and just... Yeah, you know,
okay.
Being an appraiser, but at an administrative level.
So he has a staff under him, too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's like me, then he's appointed by me.
The flow chart?
Right, my administrator's appointed by me, and everybody else is underneath them.
Interesting. Very interesting. Sounds like we got our money's worth, though.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, right. Yeah.
How are you enjoying Mojave County? And where do you live?
I love it. I live in Kingman, but I have an affection for Mojave County. I always have. My dad lived here for roughly 25
in
years.
In Havasu,
before he
yeah.
passed.
Wow.
And so I spent a lot of time in Havasu.
His last name was Rasmussen also?
Correct, yeah.
That's really strange. My best friend growing up was a Rasmussen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's more of us out there than people think.
Right, I got you. Let's go ahead and take a short break, and when we come back, let's see. Yeah, there you go. I wanted to play some Jason Aldean because that's what you chose.
That's what I was listening to on the way here.
That's what Darren was listening to. Perfect. Chief Deputy Assessor Darren Rasmussen along with Mojave County Assessor Jeannie Kench, who's elected.
Yeah.
Madam. Kench. I call her Madam Assessor. I always do. We're going to talk about that. It's a short-term rental reclassification when we come back. Mm-hmm. You got some people kind of upset.
That's okay.
But we're going to clarify.
Okay.
Let's all that, right? No, you told me.
Absolutely.
I'm like, Jeannie, what are you doing, man? Because I see a compromise after I read a few articles, and you go, we're already doing that.
That's right. That's right.
So I saw ahead. All right. An evening with Steve Trevino tomorrow night, Tropicana Laughlin. I've got tickets. Man, do I have tickets. At least 10 pair, I'm told. 8 p.m. at the Tropicana. Call me if you want tickets, 928-854-5687, 928-854-KNTR. If you want to go see some stand-up comedy tomorrow night. In the meantime, we're going to listen to a little Jason Aldean, right?
Nice.
On Speak Out. Stay with us. You can also text us, 928-727-5566. Baby, everything gonna be all right. I like that song. It's like one of my favorite Jason Aldean songs right there. I probably shouldn't even be playing it right now, right? I'm just saying. Jeannie, you need to get your ears on there, please. We're back. Oh, what are you doing over there? You're waiting until I read the billboards, and then you're going to come back with me?
trying to find that.
You got to bring your mic up too, please, to your mouth. Thank you. All right. Wow. You're going to be impeached.
I know. I was trying to find that name for you.
Speak Out, brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. Also, Mojave Electric Cooperative, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, TWM Fiber Internet, Salmon's Air Conditioning, Western Arizona Regional Medical Center, and by Booby Falls Restaurant and Rodeo, Main Street in Havasu. I guess all that talk about impeachment got me all excited there. Anyway, all right, we have information. Oh, somebody called the station for tickets. Oh, I did not give out that number, just to be clear. I'm not in timeout, all right? So two pair for Mike. You got it, Mike. No problem. And we got your email as well. They called the office number. So Mike's all set. He can go to Steve Trevino tomorrow night.
Hey,
all right.
Good for Mike.
All right. Can you use the headset, please? Or is this a private question?
How many in total do we have in case they call?
As many as you want. That's right. I'm told 10, but you can go over that if you want. All right. Thank you. All right. That's five pair, right? Okay. She likes to come in and talk off mic, and I'm like, you don't project as well as I do. But anyway.
But she's better looking.
Hey, that's not hard to do. So, Jeannie Kinch, our guest, probably for the last time on Speak Out. Kidding. Mojave County Assessor and Chief Deputy Assessor, Darren Rasmussen. And, boy, I guess we're going to step in it. We might as well, right? So,
yeah.
Now I reached out to Goldwater in transparency just to find out. I had heard that they see this reclassification of short-term rentals as problematic. Now, what I'm reading is all short-term rentals are going to be classified by Jeannie Kinch as commercial properties. You say that's not true.
Not at all. Not at all. So let's start with, we've been trying for quite a few years to be classifying short-term rental as they're supposed to be classified, but things have changed and things have morphed into where every assessor in the state was not doing that. We were just residential, but things have changed since COVID. I'd say that was the big starting point was COVID, and with that, we have to follow the law. Yes, as you said, it's not all short-term rentals are going to be classified that way. We do not want to, and we do not feel that somebody that has a casita in their backyard and they rent that out is commercial. We do not feel that a snowbird that comes in and they rent it, you know, they stay in there primarily as a residence and then when they're gone during boating season, they rent it out to boaters. Mm-hmm. That is not commercial. We're looking for, and we do have a litmus test, and I'll have Darren go over that with you. But we're looking for those short-term rentals that were purchased for short-term rentals. They were purchased to be a hotel. That we call them horizontal hotels.
Okay.
And they're acting no different than a hotel or a motel. It's just they're a small home.
Yeah, they don't have the neon up that says no vacancy.
But they still do the same thing.
They need
a business license, right? They need a TPT.
Transaction privilege tax.
That's right. Thank you for that.
No problem.
But they need all these things, including employees to come, you know, clean the houses and so forth. No different than a hotel motel, and it's available 365 days a year on a short term, less than 30 day basis. That litmus test means that we're going to be reclassifying some of them as commercial, but not all of them commercial.
So, Darren,
yes, sir.
Is this a one case at a time deal? Everybody,
yes.
That's what it sounds like. You got to go through and say, is this a mom and pop that bought it, you know, just to make an extra couple $100 a month,
right?
Or was it purchased through Airbnb by Airbnb or? Because they're doing that too.
Correct. And you know, other investment type properties are Marriott. I mean, the big hotel chains
actually are
buying up large sections of properties all over the state. And their sole purpose is not single-family residence. It is short-term, you know, 7 days and less over and over again. And those are the types of properties that now fit the commercial profile based on several different events that have been happening over the course of, like Jeannie said, you know, a lot of the unintended consequences of short-term rentals hit after COVID, but the discussion about are they commercial, when are they commercial, and what property class do they belong in has been going on for 10-plus years.
Wow.
So,
yeah, you know who, I think it's Marriott, one of those, is on the board of directors, is Mitt Romney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's on one of those hotels.
Yeah, I did not know that.
The big, yeah, one of the big luxury chains. So are you going in and you're looking at, what are you looking for criteria-wise?
Well, we have a couple of different triggers that get it started, and basically that's one of the reasons why, some of the questions I got, other than, do we have the authority,
that's our job.
It was, why
but
not?
But do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's our job.
That's, yes.
No, I mean,
you can Google that. You probably have that answer. I don't know why it takes letters to the boards of supervisors and stuff like that.
No, you can change the little pull down on their property that says commercial instead of residential.
Yes,
correct.
It's our job.
So the difference, folks, is 5%. Residential is a 10% evaluation, right?
In the assessment ratio, right.
And commercial is 15.
Correct.
Am I wrong?
Right now. Now, okay. One thing to note that commercial ratio has been dropping for the last 10 years. It came from 25 to 15 over the last 10 years. And personal opinion, there's probably going to be more of a reduction, but we'll see. I mean, that's speculation.
It'll probably always be a little bit more than residential, though,
right? I would think so.
Yeah,
I would think so. I mean, vacant land was at 16%. Now it's at 15%, just like commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what the legislature does with that. But
so what are your triggers that you were telling me?
So, all right. So some of the regulations started to loosen up over the course of the last 5 years. The state initialized that they started treating short-term rentals differently than long-term rentals in the fact that they're required to pay transaction privilege tax,
mm-hmm.
a commercial transaction privilege tax. The state and local municipalities now require a business license and a business permit. And we work with the local municipalities, and we get that list of those people that apply for that. So the state and the local municipalities are both treating them differently than a single family residence. It's a commercial aspect. And then there's really the industry standards that are out there, and I won't go in deep into that list, but special insurance. They're exempted from regular residential insurance policies. You have to,
really?
They have different cleaning contracts for quick turnover. There's all kinds of things where the outside world has begun to treat short-term rentals differently. And really, there's been some case law where some of the first comments we got when we talked about some of the case law was, well, you lost that case, they lost that case, that's a horrible case. Well, that's not really the point. The point is, how is the court determining how to classify properties? And it's the use of the property, and specifically the devoted use by the owner, not the tenant. And so if the devoted use by the owner is commercial, that's considered commercial. And so now we have all the other pieces. We're actually one of the last people out there to start treating these things like commercial. So
interesting. Are you using the, Jeannie, I'll ask you, the cities now, like Havasu has on their website, has the registered properties of short-term rentals. Are you using those as well?
Absolutely.
As a resource?
People need to understand that our appraisers are investigators. That's our job. We need to go to a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
We need to investigate the improvement. What's it used for? How big it is? What's it made out of? These are all the things we do. And so this is kind of no different in that case. We look at the list that the city gives us. We look at that map that's not real accurate, so we make certain that we follow up on that because we even get people, neighbors that contact us and let us know. We've had that happen. And then we look at all of those issues. Do they have a permit or do they have the license?
And it's really, again, not a single, just because they are filed for a permit as an STR, that doesn't automatically mean that, oh, you're commercial.
Yeah.
No, that's one indicator. So it's really the totality of several different things that we have our appraisers looking for to determine whether or not it goes to commercial.
And
real quick, just to
clarify,
if it is a primary residence, it will never go commercial. If there's a long-term rental individual in a main house and they've got an ADU or an auxiliary dwelling unit,
a casita
for short-term, it will never go commercial.
Okay.
It's specific to those that we've identified as it's a commercial operation.
Mm-hmm. What about clusters? Now, I'm wondering if Airbnb or Vrbo or Marriott, as you were saying, were buying up properties, wouldn't they buy them in groups, you know, around each other, near each other? It would seem to me that that would be a clue, too. You would see a lot of addresses together?
Yeah, you know, out there in the real world, they separate them by different LLCs.
Oh.
But you can...
Do they really?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
There's software that we have access to that identifies, and you can run this specific, if they've all got the same mailing address.
Okay.
For you know...
Payments.
Payment purposes.
Uh-huh.
So, again, these are all parts of the puzzle that we put together.
Wow. We have a what was an apartment building in Kingman that they've turned into all short-term rental. So there's your cluster. The whole.
Really?
So what's the difference between that apartment complex and a motel? Is right. there a difference? There isn't. So they better not be surprised when they get their reclass because that's very clear.
Well, the condo association that governs the condo that I live in has made a new rule for owners that if you sell a property, that the person that's buying that property cannot hereforth yep. make it a short-term rental.
There's
it's a new rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they can do that, right?
And we were contacted
yes.
just this week by a property management firm out in Bullhead City with some of those same types of questions. They manage the CC or the, you know, the Condos Association and Homeowners Association, and they contacted us directly, and we were able to you know, get some information to them to help mm-hmm. them, you know, to determine what is and what isn't real.
I got you. All right, let's go ahead and take our next break of the hour. I've still got more questions. Go figure.
I got answers.
This is a complex topic.
It is.
It's very complex.
Yeah. We're glad to clarify everything.
Yeah. A little more Jason Aldean. It's the Dirt Road Anthem, right? Probably the theme song of Golden Valley, if you will.
Yeah, right?
Who else has more dirt roads than Golden Valley, you think?
Yucca, maybe close.
Out
that area.
He's on it. Yeah. He's on it. You have assessed a few properties in Mojave County, haven't you?
A few, yeah.
All right. Jeannie Kench is here. She is the Mojave County Assessor, also Chief Deputy Assessor Darren Rasmussen. And you can call in 928-854-5687, 928-854-KNTR. Still have some Steve Trevino tickets. Tropicana Laughlin, tomorrow night we had one winner already, and he wants two pairs. So there you go. Call me, I'll give you two pair. No problem. We give them away for Diamondbacks games all the time, right? All right, back with more in a moment. Stay with us on Speak Out. I think that's a good song for a Friday. What do you guys think?
What do you think, Darren? I like it. Yes.
I said Florida Georgia Line. You're like, yeah.
That's a good one.
I thought
maybe you'd go with dirt, though, because we were just talking about dirt roads. But that's all right.
No. It's a weekend to maybe not go out for a cruise. It's supposed to be 116 tomorrow.
Oh, my.
But back down to about 109 by Monday, I believe. It's a quick spike and then back down a little bit, so... Funny how we talk about heat here like they talk about snow in North Dakota,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
Speak Out, brought to you in part by The Chair. Hey, that's it.
Oh, hello, Dallas. How you doing?
There you go.
Dallas
and Danny.
Yeah, that's
the
right.
Chair.
Dallas and Danny.
Also, Mojave College, solar powered by Esme Electric, by Dorita's Place for Pets, Legacy Rehab and Care in Bullhead City, and by A&B Propane, online at abpropaneaz.com. And don't forget, shop local because small business is kind of a big deal. And
big deal.
You know, it's funny, some people out there, I'm not going to mention any names, think that this is actually a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
For short-term rentals to be classified as commercial. Why? In other words, they're logical. Like, well, why wouldn't they be?
Well,
but not all of them.
You know, yeah, exactly. We're doing it right. And I've been talking about this for 3 years. We tried to get a bill passed. John Gillette helped me with it. Mm-hmm. We dropped the bill January, and it was dead before it even hit.
Yeah, what happened to that?
Couldn't even go advocate for it, right? Never got on an agenda. Didn't understand it. The next year, same exact thing happened. It was because of the lobbyists.
Did you go to a shredder or what?
It went to a lobbyist, okay? And literally, it was the lobbyists for the real estate industry. And we shouldn't be having lobbyists deciding how we do our job here in Mojave County or in the state. It should be the legislature, and they never even allowed it to go in front of the legislature. It again started, it was bipartisan, meaning John Gillette tried it 1 year and the second year, and then the third year was by Quanta Cruz and, mm-hmm. and Patty Contreras, and they tried to do it. And it got, same thing, got drawered. The whole time, I knew it was my job, and it was our authority and our job to classify in use. And we're not doing it around the state. And the only thing the bill said is that all of us assessors need to do this. I knew that I can do it in Mojave County, and so that's where we are. And I'm going to have Darren explain to you the history, though.
Let me ask you, or mention this, though. There are watchdog groups for the short-term rental industry. You know, they're keeping an eye on all this, mm-hmm. and they've introduced legislation since it was signed by Governor Ducey in 2016, 2017, and nearly all of those bills never saw committee.
Nope.
None of them.
The lobbyists.
How is that possible?
That's what lobbyists do.
Wow.
That's all I can tell you.
I mean, I've heard of lobbyists swaying a vote here and there, but not killing an actual bill.
Well, you got to look at the players, and I don't want to sit here and throw all those players under the bus.
I understand.
Okay? But there's a lot of players here that are making that happen, and it's the large out-of-state investors that are making on this.
Okay.
You saw how difficult it was for our cities and the League of Cities and Towns and Cal Sheehy to try to at least come get back some of the regulations that we had been entertaining all these years, and
right.
then in 2016, they just took that out and pulled it out.
Well, Darren was talking about these LLCs, you know, how they just spring up. It kind of reminded me, or I was picturing, offshore bank accounts.
Right. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. It's a business.
They
boy.
Just I mean, boom.
Yeah.
They just spring up. So why now? Why would this reclassification come now? Is the county that desperate for money? That's what some people think.
Well, no. This was not about tax dollars.
Not
this
for
was
us.
About. Well, first off, a little bit of the history. I mean, short-term rentals has been a topic for 20 plus years, and particularly, you know, at my days at the state, the state had determined and put out guidance that short-term rentals should be classified as commercial way back then, and there was case law that supported that. That's where the original premise of a property that's devoted to the owner's use, not the occupant's use. So that was kind of the guidelines back then. When I got to the Department of Revenue in 2016, that was the first thing that was put on my desk. There was a bill introduced which passed, which started all of this, really, is SB 1350, I believe is what it was. And I was given that to you know, analyze and go over. And we met with the governor's office. We met with the attorney general's office. So all these questions from the community have been addressed for quite some time and been talked through by people a lot smarter than me. Why now? Well, legislation had changed. Like I believe I mentioned earlier, at the state level, they started implementing a commercial sales tax. At the municipal level, they required business permits. They required business licenses. There's certain things about the commercial platforms that they're placed on, Airbnb, VRBO, and some of the private sector ones that are out there. So again, it's just been kind of a succession of events that said, all right, We can prove our point that this use is not a residential occupancy. It's a commercial mm-hmm. use. And that's what we say when Assessor Kent says, you know, not only do we have the authority, but the legislature requires that we change the property classification if there's a change in use.
Okay.
And so it's just, again, the totality of everything that's come together. It was time, and we tried to get, you know, legislation passed through to get the legislature to give guidance, and it just never went away. It just never even got heard.
So, Jeannie, one thing I asked you as we were prepping for the show around my desk, who else is anybody else supporting you? Any of your brethren,
absolutely,
per se?
Absolutely. All of the
assessors. But is it coming publicly?
Not yet.
So okay, they're not reclassifying any properties. They're waiting for you.
And they are for a lot of reasons. Understanding the assessor world, there's 15 of us, right? And we all have different situations. I have Lake Havasu City, which is one of the hot short-term rental spots of the state.
Yeah,
okay?
Sedona, Lake Havasu.
Exactly. And so Coconino County took the ball and tried to do some stuff about 3-4 years ago with the bill. Those also got drawered. So they're obviously behind me, all of the counties that have short-term rental areas like Yavapai County, Coconino County, our county. And even Maricopa County appreciates what we're doing and is supportive. They all agreed, and we got a unanimous support when we tried to run the bill the last time through ACO. Everybody's on board, right?
What is ACO?
The Arizona Association of County Officers, which I am currently the president of right now.
Gotcha.
We're lobbyists. Okay, they're lobbyists. And so we tried to get another bill done. Everybody's on board. Everybody knows how important it is. It got toward again. It's just crazy that the lobbyists would have that much strength.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So they all are for. It just kind of made sense that we did it because we have Lake Havasu, because I don't have millions of parcels.
Yeah.
And so they're like, you know, you're going to end up in court, and we're like, we're doing what's right. Well, let's do that. If that's the way we got to solve this court, then that's the way we.
Speaking
have to solve
of which,
it.
Who's behind you legally? Do you have legal representation?
Absolutely.
From Matt Smith?
Yes. Matt Smith's assessor. Attorney.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Definitely supports what we're doing. I would never have done this if I didn't get that sign off first. Okay.
Darren, what about ADOR? How do they – have you spoken to them about this? What's their – do they have an opinion or is there – you know, is this something that they would support or –
You know, that's a great question.
Thank you.
Of course, I've had conversations with some of my peers who are now, you know, a little higher up the food chain over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Revenue is an interesting, you know, breed. They really do have to stay kind of out of things. They'll give guidance. They'll write. Go ahead.
But wouldn't they collect the taxes from a commercial property or a residential property?
No. There are state properties, centrally valued properties.
Because they collect my state tax, right?
Well, that's income.
Okay.
Yeah, that's income.
You.
Property tax is locally assessed. It's all done by the county treasurer.
Okay, got you.
Yeah. So, but they are basically our guiding administration. They create our forms. You know, they're part of that. But when it comes to... And I don't even want to call this controversial. When it comes to a decision that the county assessor has to make, they're not going to come in and support or not. What will happen is if there's a lawsuit, and I can't speak for the department, but I know in years past, if it's a statewide, it has statewide implications, then they'll normally come out and the AG's office will get behind it. We don't know. This will have to play out.
Jeannie, if this gets killed somehow, right, it's like, okay, we don't like Jeannie's idea, but... There's people out there that do and that think that – could it go to a voter initiative?
We could.
I guess, if
it gets to the state.
You guys never thought of that, did you?
No, we did. And,
oh, okay.
And the thing is that we all know that it would pass.
You'd have a lot of money against it.
We would have money against it, but the people aren't against it. See, I was out there speaking for 3 years to all these groups around Lake Havasu and Kingman and Bullhead.
And they're saying, what can you do?
And talking about it. Yeah. And they're saying, gee, please do something about it. So the voters, the property owners want this to happen, okay? The money doesn't.
Do you think that short-term rental... You know, behemoths like Airbnb, Vrbo. Do you think they know this?
They do know it. I actually spoke to them. They said they don't get involved in policy. They're worldwide. You have to understand policy is different in every state. And now that I'm, because I'm representing the state, I've been nationally traveling and speaking at states all over. This isn't new.
No,
we have those
listeners in Laughlin that are saying, "What's the problem?
What's the problem?
The city of Henderson put a moratorium on."
Exactly.
We can't do that, Nevada listeners.
That's right.
California listeners. says, we can't do that in Arizona.
In Hawaii?
Yeah.
Do you know if you had a short-term rental, your property taxes would go from $2,500 to $25,000?
Whoa.
Okay, if you had a short-term rental and did not live there. So you know, this happens everywhere. And so Airbnb and VRBO, I spoke with them. I figured there was going to be the lions that were after me.
Right.
They're not. They says, no, we just have a platform. And that platform takes care of Arizona a certain way. And if your policy changes, your policy changes. Most business owners talk to me that have short-term rentals, and they say they're just going to pass it on to the renter, which is maybe an extra $10 or $20 a night in order to rent.
So
most of the business owners are okay with that, too.
So real quick, when you first started doing the enforcement effort, right, you're identifying those properties, was it a tidal wave at first, or was it a real slow trickle turned into a faucet, you know?
You mean as far as how many?
As far as discovering them, the number.
Well, the discovery was, there's quite a bit.
I mean, is there a community? Was it Bullhead, Kingman, Havasu?
Havasu
was more than others?
Top. Yeah, hundreds of percent, yeah.
No kidding.
I mean, if you go to the Lake Havasu website and look at that vacation rental GIS platform with all the little red Vs on there, it's astonishing. I mean, there are just numbers of them out there. But again, those don't all get turned into commercial. We have to then identify if they're being used, how they're being used, right? Are they actually a commercial enterprise, or are they part-time? So, and the other thing real quick, Paul, I just want to clarify before I lose my mental notes on it, but remember, these things are done individually, and they're noticed. They get a notice of value every year, okay? And as part of that notice of value, the classification is identified. These people have their due diligence. If they don't think it's commercial, you can appeal it.
Right.
Oh, very good.
And you can go to the assessor level, the Board of Equalization, or you can sue us.
Who makes that decision?
They do, the homeowners.
No, who makes the appeal? Is that you?
Well, ultimately, they're all on my desk.
There are three levels.
I got you.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, ultimately.
But there's three levels, assessor level, Board of Equalization, and then the judicial.
And I can't help but give Sue Ann Mello a shout-out, because now you're affecting her job too, right?
Yeah. Right. She's got my back.
That's she's collecting the money. All right. Shout-out to Sue Ann from the show. All right. That's it.
That was fast.
I'm going to take it to the top of the hour, but I'm going to try. So,
okay.
All right, again, Mojave County Assessor Jeannie Kench, Chief Deputy Assessor Darren Rasmussen. I'm trying to get Goldwater on Monday about a different issue with ESAs. And then we have another guest as well. So, anyway, thanks for being here, you guys.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
You. And hopefully I can come back after break. Stay with us on Speak Out.
Okay.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.